Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Thomas Drance is my co-host. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for the show today.
I'm excited for the lovely weather.
That's nice, too. Yeah. Going to be like 28 tomorrow, 27.
What?
Yeah.
Woo!
Oh, you're just finding out about this now? You don't obsessively check the seven-day weather forecast like I do for some reason?
I will get in the habit of it, but I'm just not used to it yet. I'm not like in summer swing yet. I also don't know exactly when low tide is at Spanish Banks, which is how you know I'm off my game.
That's when you really lock in.
When I really lock in, I can tell you when low tide is.
Fair enough.
Checking, yeah.
Fair enough.
116 tomorrow? Ooh, baby. Let's go. 28 degrees? Woo-hoo! Let's go. Summer in the city, boy.
Absolutely. Let's go. We're here. Back of my neck, getting hot and gritty. That'll be tomorrow. Were you not setting me up for that?
I wasn't.
All right. Well,
I'm really glad you took the invitation.
It worked out very well.
Killed it.
A lot to get into on the show today.
We're gonna throw a chair at this show.
Yeah, today. I was gonna say I've got security posted on the door. We're gonna make sure no yahoos who've had one too many get in here and throw my own chair at me, no less, adding insult to injury. Landon Ferraro will join us at 1 o'clock. Lots of Stanley Cup final stuff, or Stanley Cup playoff stuff, I should say, to discuss. But we will start with the Abbotsford Canucks, who advance in decisive, convincing fashion yesterday, a 5-0 win in a winner-take-all Game 5 against the Colorado Eagles in Colorado. So they now advance to the Western Conference Finals of the Calder Cup playoffs. They'll take on the Texas Stars. That series gets going on Thursday in Abbotsford. They have home ice in that series. It does the old NBA Finals format, 2-3-2. So first two in Abbey, game 6 and 7 in Abbey as well, if it gets that far. We can talk. We don't worry. We will do the nitty-gritty analysis of the players on the Abbotsford Canucks, what this means for the future of the Canucks, how does it change your view of the prospect system. I think there's at least a couple of players individually having runs here for Abbotsford too that puts them in very interesting discussions going into next season. But we do have to start with Brandon Hastel, the story of the night last night. Of course, Canucks play-by-play announcer Brandon Hastel, who's been doing a fantastic job throughout these playoffs. You've been hearing his call here on the station on Sportsnet 650 and doing his typical bang-up job. Do we have the clip ready to go? And this incident, which you might have seen on social media, but we'll just let you listen to it. Here is Brandon Hastel last night.
Got some Yahoo chap chirping at me from behind. Get out of here. What was he doing? Security. Try that again. I'm fired up. He threw my chair at me. Hit me right in the back of the leg. Like, what was he doing here? Unreal. Have another beer.
So that's Brandon Hastel. There's just so many good moments. So first of all, like him call it some Yahoo, fantastic insult.
Truly.
Some Yahoo over here causing problems.
Truly.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Try that again. Fantastic line.
Yeah. I think some Yahoo, because it's not even like one of the Yahoos you'd know.
No, exactly.
Right? It's like some Yahoo, like one of the lesser known Yahoos.
Oh, man. And just incredible. And he keeps going in the flow as well. We kind of edited it just to the, the exciting parts there. But really, barely missed a beat as someone came in and, as he said, threw a chair at him. Threw his own chair at him. And he says, who does that? And it definitely had the old Austin Powers. Like, honestly, who throws a shoe?
Who throws their chair at a broadcaster?
What kind of a man throws a shoe?
I mean, look, you don't get to the Western Conference Final in the Calder Cup playoffs if you don't have organizational grit at every level in Brandon Hastel.
Yeah.
In addition to a well-prepared Canucks team that put together a dominant effort out in Colorado yesterday afternoon, advancing the Western Conference Final for the first time in franchise history. Like, in some ways, Hastel and the team's preparedness, like, they're clearly synced up. There's a reason his game calls are so sick.
He is mirroring the team's attitude.
Yeah,
the try that again attitude.
Yeah.
Try that again, you Yahoo. I love it because it's so forceful while being so clean and like aging. Totally. You know what I mean? Yep. Like he didn't do anything inappropriate. It was just like, but it also left no doubt that he was in control and he was ready to stand on his business if absolutely necessary.
Love it.
I gotta say also, I mean, he posted on Twitter and I get that. I think, I mean, Astle's a pro, right? So he wants the focus to be on the team, not himself.
Yep.
You know, he posted on Twitter like, oh, I think I could have handled this better. I was like, I disagree. I thought that's my only quibble. I thought you handled it exceptionally well. And by the way, we will have Brandon Astle on the show on Thursday, which is when the next series starts. So we'll have him on to tee it up. Again, I don't think he's going to want to really do a blow-by-blow about the chair incident, so we'll have to give him his flowers for him because I think he wants to keep the focus on the team. But looking forward to chatting with Brandon Astle on Thursday to tee up that one against the Stars. But now we are officially in, you know, this is not just a successful Calder Cup playoff experience for the Abbotsford Canucks. This is a deep run now, right? And it's finally transitioned to the best of seven games, so they get at bare minimum another four games, two more bare minimum for the fans at the Abbotsford Center. This is a big deal for a team that's still in its relative, I don't want to say infancy necessarily, but still early years establishing itself in Abbotsford. So they've already accomplished a lot. And last night, two of the players leading the way, Linus Karlsson with a pair of goals, Artur Shelaz with another shutout in a big game, this time a 34 save effort against the Colorado Eagles. I think if you're looking not who deserves necessarily the most credit individually on the team for this run, but impact on the Canucks going forward, impact on the Canucks potentially as early as next season, I would highlight those two players, and Victor Mancini would be the other one in terms of if you're primarily focused on the Abbotsford Canucks, not just for their success, but for what it means for the Vancouver Canucks next season, those are the guys that stand out as not that you're all of a sudden changing completely what you think of them, but that have at least done enough through these Calder Cup playoffs to maybe change the discussion a little bit about how they slot in for the team next year.
Yeah, and you know, I think first of all, the success of this Abbotsford team, especially with the sea change in their function and sort of their method of operation, their prioritization, their budget under Rutherford and Alvin, and obviously primarily under Ryan Johnson, who spans both eras, right? Both the initial sort of profligate, high-spending Abbotsford Canucks teams that we saw early on in this franchise's existence post-Utica Comets, and now this sort of Rutherfordian way of, you know, there's not a lot of big one-way contracts in the American League. And those that are, like Akito Hirose, are shots that the team took on young guys. You know, Shelovs would be the other, as opposed to bringing in your equivalent of like Jason Krog, what he was as a player, or
Nick Pitan was one of the guys they signed, right?
Or what was that guy's name? Hadar?
Sure.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Vaguely.
Darren Hadar. Yeah, look him up. Darren Hadar. Sick American League scorer. Like one of the most dominant we've seen in a long, long time. So yeah, but they're not built around that type of guy. These Abbotsford Canucks. Now, that said, they're not young guys either. Right?
Right. Like, for the AHL level.
Yeah. For period.
Yeah. I mean, like Linus Karlsson.
They're young guys
25.
Relative to us.
Who isn't?
Yeah, but that's not saying much. I mean, they're the leading scorers on this team, Linus Karlsson, Sammy Blais, Philip DiGiuseppe. Right?
Yeah.
You have to get down to Archdeep Baines, Max Sasson before you get under the age of 25 in terms of this team's top six scorers, right? You do have a few contributors sprinkled in who are still prospects, guys like Ty Mueller and Victor Mancini, and obviously Jonathan Lekarimäki, although he's been limited. Atu Ratu hasn't been healthy, so he hasn't been as big a contributor as he might have been. I wonder if we'll get to see. I mean, Ratu would be a huge boost.
Huge addition for them. He was a great Abbotsford player this year, right? He had 40 points in 43 games in the regular season.
And so I'd say it's like, this shouldn't change how we look at the Canucks prospect pool, but I do think it changes what we look at in terms of the competition for fourth line spots going into training camp next year. And more than that, you're now at a point where the stage is going to get actually big. Where, you know, we'll probably see a game or two broadcast locally where we're going to see, you know, a different level of attention and a different level of intensity on the ice. And that means that for your Mancini, Lekaramäki, Atu Ratu if he gets back. Kirill Kudryavtsev, who played yesterday, he hasn't been a regular for this team, right? There's three games that he's been scratched for, but made it back into the lineup for Game 7, and obviously the team put together a thoroughly impressive performance. You know, now those guys are going to get a learning opportunity on a really, really big stage, and that matters a ton for this prospect pool going forward, even if, you know, this run isn't being powered by, like, a youthful, like, this isn't the John Cooper Norfolk Admirals powered by, you know, Palat and Ty Johnson, you know, presaging a decade of dominance to come in the NHL. And I think it's important that we note that this isn't being driven by, like, a young core group, but it is being driven, at least to some extent, so there's some heavy contributors who are, like, organizational depth pieces who've been around now for a bit, kind of have a familiarity with how Rick Tocchet wanted to play. Presumably Adam Foote's not going to offer a massive departure. Guys like Sasson with his speed, Baines with his playmaking,
Linus Karlsson,
puck battle winning. Linus Karlsson, who scored, like, the 4-0 goal is the ultimate Linus Karlsson goal, where it's like it's from the dirty areas. He's got the skill and the size and the strength to make a play in a tight area, right? It's incredibly skilled, and yet, you know, it's also, like, happens at slow motion. It's like a 50-50 battle that he beats, but it's such a, like, slow-moving play. But, you know, I mean, we saw it with Karlsson at the net front, right? On the power play late in the year, too. In tight, this guy's got a lot of skill, and he's pretty heavy on his stick. I don't know. What else is there to say? Like, I think he could be a fourth line winger on an everyday basis for the Canucks next season, and I think he could have some special teams utility because he's got good hands and tight. You know, almost think about it like a homegrown Alex Chiasson.
That's exactly it, right? Your power play two specialist who can also hold down a regular shift on the fourth line.
Yeah,
and
except it's more like a PP2 power, like
power play two specialist. Yeah. You don't. I mean, unless he really glows up, you don't want him playing net front on your power play one.
Probably not,
but. Hey, Alex Chiasson scored a bunch of goals for the Canucks that one year.
Alex Chiasson was part of an Edmonton Oilers power play that was number one in the NHL.
There
you
go.
Alex Chiasson rocks. Did you see he went back to and got his degree, by the way? Congrats.
I did see that.
To him.
Yeah, good for him. I think the Linus Karlsson thing, again, it's a low ceiling, but still just what he's doing kind of reemphasizes what we saw from him in the NHL this year, where you could see, okay, I can see how that guy can contribute to a bottom six, why Rick Tocchet is a fan of his game, all of the tools that he has. Now, again, he'll turn 26 in November, so this is not exactly a prospect, really, we're talking about. It's more of an organizational depth piece, but still, to have that extra competition, to have those extra bodies on the fourth line, I mean, as we talk about, you know, should they explore trading a guy like Dakota Joshua? Should they explore the market on a guy like Kiefer Sherwood? You want to have those bodies coming that you feel good about plugging in. If you are, it opens up other options for you while you're building your roster. The other player that I think, not that it necessarily has dramatically transformed what we think of the player or what the organization will think of the player, but I just think it's a fascinating development, is Archer Shelovs. And again, I can't tell you that all of a sudden this is completely, you know, now the organization says, yeah, we think he's going to be a great NHL goalie again after what happened at NHL level this year. But I don't think there's anyone on an individual level on that team who needed this type of experience to wrap up their season more than Archer Shelovs, considering what a struggle it was at the NHL, in the NHL for him this season, to have an extended run now where he is stringing together good performances, winning massive games, putting together some in massive game shutout performances to help his team advance. Again, I can't tell you what it means for Archer Shelov's future, how it might change how he fits into the plans of the Canucks, but it's got to feel incredible for him on an individual level, considering how his season went before this.
Yeah, I mean, so what do we know about Archer Shelov's, right? We know that he's pretty much got zero pulse, you know, like, and this is sort of one of those things where it's not like he came up to the NHL and looked like he had the yips.
Yeah.
He just looked like he wasn't prepared to stop an acceptable number of pucks through traffic, given how effective NHL players are at creating it and exploiting it as shooters. Is that fair? I think that's the fairest thing to say about where Archer Shelov's game was at. It's not like he played poorly. It's like he just had this one fundamental issue in his game, and whether it's technical or I don't think it was mental. Like, I don't think this guy, I think this guy's completely unflappable. I don't even know if he has a heartbeat. You put a stethoscope to Artur Shelov's and it's like, there's not even like, dum. There's like, there's nothing. Which, you know, and this is very much complimentary.
I was going to say, and we mean that in a positive sense.
Non-derogatory. No, like you'd say it about, you know, some of the best athletes we've seen.
Yeah.
Like Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, right? Like no heartbeat, ice water in their veins. And, you know, Shelov's has been incredible in especially these elimination games that the Abbotsford Canucks have played. And by the way, like, you know, I still remember a shutout in Nashville as the Canucks advanced to the first round for the first time with fans in the building since 2011. You know, like I still remember that performance. So we know he's athletic. We know he's hardworking. We know he's unflappable. And we know that he was unstartable at the NHL level this past season. And frankly, wasn't all that good in the AHL this season either until the playoffs. And so you've got sort of the profile of a 23-year-old who developed precociously, has absolutely killed it at some really high-level competitions throughout his career. I'm talking World Championships, obviously, and then the Calder Cup playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, on big stages, this guy has brought it. Consistency-wise, he hasn't had it, and there's a major defect in his abilities at the NHL level to stop pucks. Well, it's one of the craziest goaltending profiles I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's so much to like and so much to not like simultaneously.
Yeah.
But I can imagine if you are another NHL team and you see the record of big game performances from him, including at the NHL level, right? Like, that's a pretty interesting thing. You're probably like, hey, we'll take a flyer on this guy. Now, I don't know what that translates to in like trade value or anything like that, but it's just, you got to think he's going to keep getting opportunities, because if you're doing this in big games consistently enough, there's something there. And yet, as you said, we all saw how it looked at the NHL level. It wasn't close to good enough.
The thing is, though, right, is like, okay, so how does that become actionable for the Canucks? Because the main thing that this run will change is Shelov's potential to clear waivers after training camp next year goes down the drain, right? Like, that is
Someone will take him on a flyer.
Someone is more likely.
Yeah.
I want to avoid, like, the market is so odd. And there's so many things that influence it, like timing. You know, you wave him day one of training camp, maybe he clears. But toward the start of the regular season, right after another team's had an injury, and he doesn't. So, but yeah, I think more likely as a result of a 936 run with some star-level performances in the Calder Cup playoffs, following up on the NHL success that he had in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year. You know, I think teams will be like, okay, look, there's a flaw here, but we have to be able to address that to get a big game goalie.
Mm-hmm.
A young, big game goalie who's crushed it on every big stage he's ever been thrust into. Like, what are we talking about? We need that player.
It feels like in baseball, like a pitcher with like electric stuff, but just can't find the strike zone with a map. You know what I mean? And teams are like, well, we'll bet on those tools, right?
But,
like,
but it's
we'll
not even that. It's not even that, because it's like he only finds his stuff in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like, I don't know, it's like Claude Lemieux of goaltending.
I think it's
like Claude Lemieux was just like a third.
It's just that idea, though where it's like there's the one thing you need to fix. And if you fix that, it's like, wow, you're really cooking then. You know what I mean? There's upside there if you can fix that one thing. But obviously they haven't been able to do it here. And I mean, we'll see.
Well, so this is, does it become actionable enough? Like, would you be comfortable with Lankin and Shelov's next season?
No, I don't think
plus a return for Demko? I'll be honest with you. I think you have to be.
Man.
Like, what's the argument?
So I think,
I'm like, just bear with me. What's the argument?
Okay. I think you can make the argument because that's the highest upside scenario, right? Because you're getting a return for Demko and you're placing a bet on Shelov's that he has found something, or you can at least tweak it and work with him enough that you'll get 35 good games from him next year, or 35 at least decent enough games from him next year. Plus you get the return and the cap space from Demko. I get
that. And you don't extend a player who has his lengthy injury history.
It's just really hard for me, knowing how NHL teams view goalies, right? And I think how much his stock decreased this year with his NHL performances and how much emphasis they're putting on this season and being competitive. It's really hard for me to wrap my mind around them doing that. But I think the argument to do it would be they should be chasing maximum upside in every possible move they make. And that's going to, inherent in that is you have to be willing to take on some risk. And that would be a big risk, but it would also have a lot of upside attached to it as well.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, though, is like there's no points or there's no prize awarded for failing a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like there's no prize awarded for having 90 points next season and missing the playoffs by 4 points as opposed to having 80 and missing by 14.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You know, the Demko logic, the idea of a shared risk extension between the club and the goaltender, which I think both sides are open to and have explored, you know, it makes sense. But it's also something where, you know, like, I think it should give you a lot of pause, right? I think it should give everyone a lot of pause, given what we've seen and given what we know about the unprecedented nature of Demko's knee injury last season and then the 3 extended absences that he dealt with this season, not to mention the fact that even when he was in net, it looked not very Thatcher Demko-like. I mean, he had an .889 save percentage mm-hmm. in 23 games. Like, he wasn't the dominant goaltender we've come to know. Does he get back there? Like, you're not just taking injury risk with Demko. You're also taking performance risk, given what we've seen from him across the last 12 months. And I don't know, like, I think given that he's an expiring guy, right? Given that he'd still be marketable, especially for teams. Like, we know what the ceiling case on Demko is, right? I actually think keeping Demko is the highest upside option. I think dealing Demko is sort of the middle route where it's like, okay, we're going to bet on our goaltending. Mm-hmm. We have Lankinen. We signed him long-term. We like him. And we've got this guy who has some really attractive attributes, even if he hasn't put it all together consistently. So I don't know. It's a really interesting situation in Vancouver's goal, but I think I would sort of suggest to you that the risk is on the other foot. The risk is in extending Demko.
Well, extending Demko for sure.
The risk and the upside is going into this season once again with Demko. The middle of the road play actually is to go a little bit younger, spend that free up an additional $5 million in cap space to send on your spend on forwards, bring back an asset that you could use to trade for a forward. Yep. Like, it would free up a lot of different stuff for you to go chasing the sort of forward that we're talking about this team needing. So I think that's the middle of the road sort of path. And the upside risk path is in extending Demko this summer.
Well, extending Demko for sure.
Well, no, but that's happening if he's staying. Like, that's...
You sure?
Well, am I taking it to the bank?
Have no appetite? I'm not sure about that. I could easily see them going into the season with him unextended.
I would be surprised.
All right.
I think that this is one of those where, you know, I think both sides are open to it. I think both sides have expressed a desire to do it. The obvious risk mitigation incentive on Demko's end is clear. You know, the Canucks can find a way to sort of effectively like share the risk, buy low somewhat on a player that they think has elite potential. I think that is interesting to them. Like, what does it benefit the Canucks to go into the season with Thatcher Demko and have him rebuild his value?
I don't know, but what does it benefit them to lose Brock Besser for nothing? Like,
yeah, no, that, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying it's the smart move, but I'm not shutting the door on it.
But that's a decision that's baked in now. Like, I'm just saying, this is one that you make this summer. You know, like,
I agree they should make the decision this summer. I'm just not as optimistic that it will definitely happen, that they'll make a decision one way or another.
I just think the internal logic, if you're going to swing the bat on Demko, what do you get if you're right?
Sure.
Multiple years at Demko at a lower cost than you mm-hmm. otherwise would. Mm-hmm. And from Demko's perspective, security that you might not have if you go into the season and sustain another injury at any point. I mean, to me, that's how you swing the bat on Demko. I think the organization views it somewhat similarly. The player has made it clear that he views it that way. So, I mean, for me, that's just like, you know, the third path you're suggesting where you go into the season with Demko still on the roster but not extended, that's the one that makes no sense. That would be the least likely path.
I'm not advocating for that. But yeah. I also think it's like, I think it's more likely than you are saying.
I just think it's the least likely of the two.
All right, fair enough.
Not by like a lot. I'm talking like 20% versus 40%, 40%.
Not completely unlikely.
Get out of here, Jamie.
You're out of your mind.
Try that again.
You Yahoo.
Not even one of the better known Yahoos.
Some Yahoo over here. All right, before we go to break, time for a quick one to watch brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. It's the Stars and the Oilers tonight. Stars trying to even up the series. Oilers trying to take the big 3-1 lead. I'm going to point to Wyatt Johnston here. I know there's just been a lot of talk generally about the Stars' depth scoring, and I wouldn't even really think of Wyatt Johnston's depth necessarily. He's kind of frontline secondary scoring after, you know, Mikko Rantanen. So, 4 goals in 16 games in the playoffs so far for Wyatt Johnston. I know everyone's harping on his plus minus, but I'm not pointing at that as much as I am just in general. Him and the rest of that kind of higher end supporting cast for the Dallas Stars needs to get going, needs to find a way to put Edmonton under some pressure tonight if they're going to even this series up. That's one to watch, brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. It's time to put on your Toyo tires. Whether you drive a car, light truck, or van, Toyo tires are designed to perform in all kinds of conditions. Visit Delaney's OK Tire in Langley and Aldergrove. We'll take a break. Frank Saravalli, interesting off-season trade board published today at Daily Faceoff with some Canucks-related content. We can get into that. We can take some text next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. As I mentioned just before break, I want to get into the latest trade targets board from Frank Saravalli, Sportsnet 650 contributor, up at Daily Faceoff right now. And this is very useful because we talk a lot of times in general terms about, you know, the Canucks need to go. They're probably not going to get it done in the UFA market. Jim Rutherford has said as much as well. So they want to add these forwards. They need to go out to the trade market to do it. And we talk often about it in general terms. We've started getting specifics a little bit with some people, but it's helpful to have this kind of list from someone like Frank of at least, you know, not guys who are guaranteed to move or anything, but potential trade targets out there for any team, including the Canucks. And I will say in our inbox, we always get, there's an insatiable appetite for us to name names, be specific when we're talking about these forward targets out there. So we can piggyback a little bit on what Frank is doing here.
And I do think we should start by noting the Canucks players that are on it.
Sure.
Because they're high profile players.
Yes. And it's a 20-player list, and they're both towards the bottom of that list. But he has Thatcher Demko at 18 and Elias Pettersson at 20. And not necessarily a ton of reporting in the little blurbs here. But one thing I wanted to note on Thatcher Demko one was the last line in it. Demko seemed awfully loyal to coach Rick Tocchet, wondering if a reunion in Philadelphia is possible. And anytime a national insider uses the word wondering, like, I'm wondering if this is going on, my antenna goes up, because oftentimes it's like,
well, especially when it's Frank Saravalli talking about Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's like I doubt that's just something he tossed off the top of his head.
No, that's you know, Frank can get a Philadelphia Flyers scoop while mowing his lawn. So here's, by the way, why Saravalli's really good at this exercise too, is I do think his level of, like, this is not just things I've been told, right? Saravalli pours over the pages and I think does a really good job of connecting dots, mm-hmm. using just sort of his experience and then also having the contacts to follow up on it. Yeah. And so you've got a smart guy doing the legwork and going into the lab and coming out with this list. I give it some credence. The Demko one is fascinating, and again, I just think it has to come down to the extension dynamics here, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you're keeping Demko, it's because you can work out an extension. If you're not, if you're moving on, I mean, Philadelphia makes a ton of sense.
Yeah,
because they're
perpetually desperate for a goalie.
Well, they had the worst goaltending in the league.
Yeah.
Like, by a lot. I mean, you get Thatcher Demko and you get 45 healthy games out of him at a 9-10 save percentage, which is, I think, moderate range of outcomes for Demko given his skill level and faculty stopping pucks at the NHL level. That's a playoff team. Like, that's a playoff team immediately with no other upgrades, which you'd expect them to have some other upgrades. So, a pretty interesting one there. And then the Pettersson part of this.
Yes.
So, I mean, there are more questions than
yeah. Again, it's not anything. I wouldn't say it's necessarily adding any new tidbits to the Elias Pettersson conversation, other than he felt it appropriate to include him on the list.
Yeah,
and somebody texted in immediately, and I know there's Frank has ruffled some feathers here in this market before, and he
no
says
way, Frank Moses Lawn.
Yeah, well, no, not that one. That's just a good joke. But so I said, Petey isn't getting moved. Saravalli just hates Petey. I would be stunned if the Canucks aren't going to listen, at the very, very minimum, listen to offers on Elias Pettersson, right? Like, have we all forgotten everything that played out just this past season where it was credibly reported that both JT Miller and Elias Pettersson were on the trade market sometimes at the same time of the year, other times at different parts, right? It seemed to be maybe, okay, Elias Pettersson's off now that we've done the Miller trade, but we're going to revisit it down the road. There was the Carolina Hurricanes have kicked tires on him a couple of times in recent seasons.
Well, and do you think anything they've seen in the Eastern Conference Finals is going to stop them from, seriously swinging the bat here?
No, absolutely not. So I'm not saying it's likely, the most likely scenario. I don't think it is. But I also don't think it's something that we can completely write off, the idea that they're going to really see what's out there for Elias Pettersson and potentially pull the trigger and deal him. I just think it would be kind of sticking your head in the sand a little bit, I think, to everything that happened this last season, to think that there's no way they move Elias Pettersson. So I think it's appropriate. Just we're all waiting to see what happens here. We're all waiting to see how this one transpires. And the texter says, come on, they're looking for forwards. They're going to subtract. Be real. If you don't think Elias Pettersson is going to bounce back in a meaningful way, then yeah, they would absolutely have to think about subtracting him from the roster. Again, not saying it's going to happen, but it's definitely one of the possibilities in play this summer. So those are the Canucks on the list. Thatcher Demko at 18, Elias Pettersson at 20. There's some really interesting names that the Canucks could be targeting, and especially higher up the list as well. And number one is a guy we've talked about a little bit, but from the Buffalo Sabres, J.J. Paterka. And his name came up around the trade deadline, ultimately didn't move, stayed there. I've always been a little, his name's out there, but I've always been a little bit confused as to why. Like, what is the motivation for Buffalo to move on from this player? Now, Frank's reporting makes it seem like maybe it's a little bit more player driven here, right? That there might be a bit of a change of scenery. In fact, he says the sense is a change of scenery is in order, right? So maybe it's not Buffalo wanting to move on, but maybe the player is looking for a change of scenery. He also says they got some significant offers for Paterka in the days leading up to the March deadline, but Buffalo was not biting. They may have less choice now with a potential offer sheet waiting on the other end of July 1st. So this could be a situation where they think their hands are going to be tied by an offer sheet, so they may as well trade the player and be proactive about it. If J.J. Paterka is legitimately on the market, if it's a situation where the RFA contract negotiations are too difficult for Buffalo and they think they have to make a deal, he's number one on this list. I think he should be number one on the Canucks list of targets as well. We're looking for a guy still relatively young. I mean, quite young. He's 23. So you can still envision him leveling up from where he was. But the speed, the offensive skill, I know he's not a center. He's a winger, yes. But we're talking about dynamic offensive players that you can see holding down a top of the lineup role for you that are going to be available on the trade market. I'm not sure another name that checks more of those boxes is going to come available than J.J. Paterka.
I think if you're considering, like, first of all, I'm a big J.J. Paterka fan. He might be one of, if not the outright worst,
defensive players
in hockey.
Uh-huh.
So there's some projection there because it's not a work rate thing. Like, he works hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's a glider. It's not like he's striding upright through the neutral zone or barely striding upright through the neutral zone. He's just it's just messy around him defensively. Now, is that Buffalo Sabres disease? Or is there...
Could be part of it.
Is there something real there? Because, you know, right now anyway, his defensive play prevents him from being an elite player. He is an elite player in every other respect. But his defensive play means that you don't win your battles at the top of the lineup. Like, and to me, that's a big concern. That's not what the Canucks need. They need someone to help help win at the top of the lineup.
See, I think they have to be willing to bet on a 23-year-old player with that profile.
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? That yep. we can get him at least to the acceptable range where you're not giving it all back. You know what yeah. I mean? And you are winning your battles because you need... Where else are you going to find a player with that type of offensive upside or offensive profile? That's the thing. And look, you hired Adam Foote. Right. He was the disciple of Rick Tocchet, the ultimate structure team defense guy. You're presumably hoping you can get a similar effect from Adam Foote. Why else hire that type of coach if you're not going to try to level up the individual defense from your players? So if you like this, that's the exact type of bet they should be making to me. Hey, we desperately need a jolt of offense on our team. We'll help him figure out it defensively. He's never going to be a Selke guy, but we'll get him to a level where we're comfortable with it at least. And then we'll have a top of the lineup forward. Like, to me, you're not going to find the perfect player. So you have to pick and choose your warts. And I'm fine with the defensive warts if the offensive upside and skill is there.
Yeah. I'm all in on JJ Paterka as like a fire all weapons opportunity for somebody. But again, like, do you think,
are you winning the bidding?
How are you winning yeah. the bidding?
Especially, if he's legitimately out there and teams are going to be lining up.
Especially like a team like Carolina. You know, I mean,
right.
don't put it past Carolina, assuming they bow out at some point, whether it's in 5 or 6, right? Or 7. I mean, who knows? It's Bobrovsky. Sorry, Wish. Don't put it past a team like Carolina to enter the market on July 1 and be like, we want to get both Ehlers and Marner.
Mm.
And failing that, turn their attention to massive ticket items. You know, I mean, that we've seen them swing the bat. They load it up with multiple future firsts. They have this, you know, reams of like similar prospects too. Guys like Jarvis, but also Jackson Blake, but also, you know, and on down the list, but also Bradley Nadeau. And I mean, they have the chips to play. They have the chips to play to go take some big swings and try to fundamentally reimagine what they can be from an overall like aggregate talent level perspective. And you know, that to me, Paterka, like, how do you, if you show up at the negotiating table and Eric Tulski is already sitting there, do you just turn around and walk out the room?
You're going to be very hard pressed to beat it.
You better peacock, like you better wear a funny hat.
I can see Rutherford negging some people pretty well. I think he would be good at that.
It's a risky
game. I think we've seen it in public sometimes.
Arguably. Here's the guys, though, that stand out the most to me on this list. Okay? Down at number 16.
Okay.
Pavel Zacha and Morgan Geekie from the rebuilding Boston Bruins. Right? Boston mm-hmm. Bruins are pivoting into sort of a new era for their franchise. They traded for Casey Mittelstadt, who was brutal down the stretch, but is a center. They've got Fraser Minton, who they acquired for Brandon Carlo. Mm-hmm. Nice, tidy bit of work there by Messrs. Sweeney. And, you know, he's going to need minutes. They also have that Matthew Poitras. I don't know, man. I'm sure I butchered that. But he's a promising centerman. Like, could they go young down the middle? Right? Morgan Geekie is an RFA. He's got a strong arbitration case. And he shot 20%.
Yeah.
Like, he was literally the 8th most efficient 5-on-5 goal scorer in the NHL. He scored 33 goals this year, which is completely out of line with what he's done previously. Now, he's more a winger than a center, but he's like a wide-bodied, right-handed shooting, like pretty heavy middle six guy who produced at a preposterous range. Like, not only could Geekie be available in trade, Geekie could be available as a non-tender candidate.
Right.
Because his arbitration case is going to be through the roof. I mean, I'm talking like $5.5 million award potentially as a 33-goal scorer. It's going to be really hard for Boston to keep that cap hit manageable. Do they even worry about that in a rebuilding situation? I'd imagine they do, right? Like, I'd imagine they do. And then Pavel Zacha, first of all, I think has been a target for this management group in the past when he was back in his New Jersey Devil days. like big-bodied, reliable, two-way guy who's got consecutive 50-point seasons. I mean, look, is it sexy? It's not.
Nope.
But as a stylistic compliment, you know, for like Elias Pettersson, like, don't you? I'm sure this organization is looking at their team and thinking, man, we really need just like some beef down the center of our forward group. In addition to some speed, you know, Zach is
in
a guy.
In addition to some skill.
Yeah, in addition to good players.
Yeah.
But like Zach is a guy who can kind of bring all of that. I mean, he's not the fastest skater, but, you know, he moves decently well for a guy his size. And that's always a bad. That always means he's not fast. I fell into the trap, Jamie.
Yeah, you're not getting him for his speed.
He's got good hands for a big guy. Anyway, no, but he's, but for a player of his size, like legitimately, he's a good skater. He's not a great skater. He's not Filip Hedl.
No.
He's not Shane Wright. But for a 6'3", 200 pounder, like he's an above average skater in real terms, which makes him a very good skater
for
his
size.
Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, that would certainly fit. Those two guys, to me, especially in a world where the Canucks are putting their 15th overall pick on the table, like, you know, 15th overall, what does it buy you? Like, not that much, but could it buy you a Pavel Zacha?
Yes.
Right? Like, that's sort of in and around the range where it feels realistic, especially given what Boston's priorities probably are going to be this summer. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a team that would presumably look at 15th overall and think, hey, that's actually really something we need, especially if the board unfolds a certain way. So, you know, I like that tier for the Canucks. And then Geeky, again, more winger than center, but right-handed and can play the position. You know, to me, also has some of that, like, beef, man. Like, again, both of those guys have that size that I'm sure that a team with, you know, Pettersson, Garland, and Quinn Hughes as their three best players is looking at and thinking, boy, like, I mean, you're watching these playoffs games.
Yep.
Does Vancouver feel like a big enough team to you?
No.
You know, like, they need to be faster, too, but they don't have enough beef. And those guys would sort of check that box.
Now, I do wonder also if you went out, let's say you make the Pavel Zacha acquisition, and it's not the sexiest, it's not the high skill thing, but as you said, it checks some boxes and you might have the assets to get it done. There's another name that I was interested in on Frank Saravalli's board here, and it was came in at number five, and it was Jonathan Marchessault out of Nashville. And we've talked about the Ray Whitney comp, right? Who was acquired by Carolina in Jim Rutherford's tenure there, helped them win a Stanley Cup. But as an older player to come in, you know, we mentioned Matt Duchene. Nashville is a fascinating team to me because it was such a disappointing season. And I know they just signed Jonathan Marchessault, but it was such an incredibly disappointing season for them that it feels like a lot of options are going to be on the table. And with 4 years, I think $5.5 million left on his deal at his age, I wonder how robust the market would be for Jonathan Marchessault. But I wonder if that's at least, again, not the sexiest thing to go out for a player at that age, and it's not, you know, the 26-year-old potential 2C that you're hoping for. But if you get some of that size and that beef down the middle in Pavel Zacha, and then you get some of the scoring punch in a relative buy-low situation from Jonathan Marchessault, if that's a way to get as much as you can done, considering the relative lack of assets you have relative to the other some of the other teams.
Yeah, I mean, Marchessault's got that dog in him. Right,
that would be nice.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of his game just generally. I don't see a ton, like, the, I don't know, man. It's so tough to that Nashville team. Everyone was like kind of sleepwalking.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? By the end of the season, so it's hard for me to have a good sense of, like, you know, Marchessault's never been a fast skater.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's never been his game. He's never been a speed guy, but he's relentless on the forecheck and he's an exceptional shooter and like a really smart offensive player. So, you know, it's hard for me to have a good sense of
how much is left.
Well, yeah, how much is left, especially because my guess is a lot. My guess is Marchessault remains a top six caliber player, maybe even a top line caliber player for the next few years, like into his mid-30s. He's absolutely built like a bowling ball, right? He's one of those guys, chest is always out too. You know, he's a proud guy. He's worked incredibly hard to get to the point that he's had in his yep. NHL career. I mean, yeah, I'm talking like he's got a large family, you know, living in hotel rooms in Syracuse with three kids, right? Like them traveling with him on call-ups. Like this guy's sacrificed. This means a lot to him. And he approaches it with that level of seriousness. And he's got some of that like Marty St. Louis body going, mm-hmm. right? Like his lower body is massive. He is a dedicated pro athlete. This is a craft for him and he takes it very seriously. But it just makes me nervous when a 34-year-old player, you know, goes through the sort of season that he did in Nashville where, you know, he was super unlucky in a lot of ways. Like his finishing was off in a way that I don't think tells us much about like a diminishing level. But, you know, he's so in the thick of it. And toward the end of the season, watching that Predators team like just get ragdolled repeatedly by the St. Louis Blues, just felt like there was very little dog left in that team. And I just struggled to evaluate an older player.
Isn't
in
that kind of
environment.
One of the bets you want to make, though, is that like you almost throw that season out because it was such a disaster, right?
No one has ever made a lick of money betting against Jonathan Marchessault.
Yeah.
Right? Like across a 15-year professional hockey career, you just want to bet on Jonathan Marchessault to be an outlier, to beat the odds. Like he's one of those guys. And yeah, I think it would be cool, really cool, for this team to have more guys who just like have that.
Yeah.
Like that streak in them.
Because the names at the top, right? Like J.J. Paterka, team should be lining up for him. Marco Rossi, we've talked about. He's on this list too at number 3 from Frank Saravalli. I think teams should be lining up for Marco Rossi. I think the Canucks should be lining up for Marco Rossi. You find a way to get both of those guys? I don't think it's possible, but hey, that's amazing. That's incredible, right? That's an absolute home run swing. But then you start going down the list and you get to Pavel Zacha, right? And I think that's where Jonathan Marchessault falls to me, is that kind of, okay, second or third tier of options that don't immediately leap off the page, but when you start to dig into it, there's at least reasons you could be interested in the player, reasons you want to acquire them. And again, just that compete level, as you say, that dog, all of that, the intangible stuff that he brings, I think would be much, much appreciated here in Vancouver. Now, someone points out, you can bet he has a 15-team no trade. You can bet Vancouver's on it. That's probably true.
It's a pretty significant list of teams. 15-team no trade is very, very good protection.
Yep. Is there a desire to get out of Nashville because it was such a disaster? Who knows? But anyways, I'm throwing it out there.
No,
at least.
I mean, Nashville's a great place to live with a young family. You're on the East Coast. That's the other thing, like, yeah, I'd be surprised if Marchessault ended up in Vancouver.
I would as well.
The team that should honestly go after him that I feel like could really benefit from a player like him is the Montreal Canadiens. And it's not just putting together a French Canadian mm-hmm. player with the Habs, but I just think he's the sort of guy that especially around a young team, like he's won. You know, did he win the Conn Smythe? Yeah, he won the Conn Smythe.
Yeah.
So he's a decorated guy. There's no one who he can't tell, I've been in your shoes, mm-hmm. right? Like the top scoring, top power play, first line guy, going through it, struggling to score, I can relate to you, right? The guy who's up and down between the American League and going through mm-hmm. like tougher times, he can relate to that guy. And again, just like an absolute beast in terms of his work ethic and sort of like gym form and on and on. So, I mean, that to me would be the sort of thing where it's like, could they, you know, trade Josh Anderson's the contract and he saves the Predators a year and the Predators think, hey, we're getting bigger, and the Habs get the better player and then go find a bigger guy.
Yeah.
You know, and like actually pay for the sort of size they need. Right.
Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Landon Ferraro joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance here. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics, working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and lots to get into now with our next guest. We can talk a little Abbey Canucks as well as the conference finals happening in the NHL right now. And joining us now, former NHL player, now a contributor here on Sportsnet 650 and on Sportsnet TV, he is Landon Ferraro. Landon, thanks as always, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. So Abbotsford, all the way. I mean, we had a big conversation about the team and, you know, Linus Karlsson and what Mancini was doing at that level as well. But now officially to the Western Conference Finals, you know, to the best of seven. And, you know, I know we talked about your Calder Cup run, your successful Calder Cup run in your AHL career. Is this the point where it starts to kind of feel real, right? They're like, holy cow, we're two rounds away from possibly taking home this trophy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one of those, as you go through, like, you're just building confidence. And, you know, this Abbey Canuck team is a little bit different in that sense because they had one heck of a winning streak going into playoffs. They lost one before to end it, but I think it got to 13 games. And, you know, so they were already really confident in themselves. But with every good team that you start knocking off, you know, you start to build a little bit more, you start to have a bit more belief. And, you know, we were talking about it a little bit when I was in there last week, but, you know, they get to the best of sevens now. So they know it's, you know, it's another new challenge, and it's something that, you know, it's obviously the conference finals, you're going to be ready to play, but jumping up to the best of sevens, you know that you got to, you know, you have to have a good start and not be able to, you know, take your foot off the gas through a long series.
What's the learning opportunity mean for young players? You know, to this point, this Abbotsford run has been powered more by sort of like American League vets, but for a Jonathan Lekarimäki and Atu Ratu, if he gets back, a Victor Mancini, you know, what does the chance to play in this sort of stage mean in terms of what they'll learn, what, how they'll develop?
Well, the biggest thing, well, there's a couple big things, but you know, knowing that, you know, how to compete when you start to lose all open space on the ice. You know, everyone knows the deeper you go on playoffs, doesn't matter what level you're at. When you're at a very good level, like, the teams get better, the defense is more emphasized, and it's harder to find open ice, harder to find those opportunities for offense and create chances. So, you know, getting a first real taste of that in pro hockey is a big thing. And, you know, it's one thing to be able to do it, you know, a couple nights in a row in the regular season halfway through the year. But again, like, when every single battle is that much harder to get in and out of, and like, it's, your body gets tired, you get tired, but you got to find a way to still be effective. And then that's the other side of it, is playing this many games. We were talking about it last week, but, you know, playing that many more games than you're used to and having to be at your very best, it really shows what you can push your body to and how far, you know, how much further you can push yourself once you get to summer, because you realize, like, you've unlocked a whole bit of, you know, work ethic that you didn't even know was missing. And it's not a bad thing that it's missing, but that's why playoff runs are so important.
How difficult is it? I'm thinking of specifically a player like Jonathan Lekarimäki, who, you know, still so young, but we also know needs to add that strength, needs to get bigger and stronger to really hit his level at the NHL level. Does it get complicated, right, coming off a run, a lengthy run like this, to have that kind of summer in the weight room that we would all think a prospect like Lekarimäki needs to have?
I mean, he'll still be able to get some really good work in the off season. You know, I think it'll be a lot more pointed than, you know, when you have a long time, then you can really kind of go through everything. But when you don't have as much, you have to be a lot smarter about how you go at things to make sure you still get rest, but you're making those gains you're looking for. But, you know, again, I'm not comparing myself to Lekarimäki. He is a far superior player, but, you know, I was a slight guy myself, and I was 21 going through that playoff run, and, you know, like, still a lot to learn. And what I was able to pull out of that run, learning how to be smarter in battles, learning when it's, you know, it is a good time to throw the extra hit or not, just save it for the next time, and all those little things to where you start to learn. And this is the biggest part of being a pro is, you know, it's easy to be your best when you're feeling great, but when you feel terrible, you're tired and all of those things, like, how can you still do your job to help your team? And that's what really elevates, you know, guys that play in the American League, the bubble guys, to full NHLers and stars. Like, they can elevate that much farther when they don't have their best stuff.
And one guy who is elevating in a big way in these playoffs is in the crease, Archer Shelovs. And, you know, we were talking earlier in the show, it's been a fascinating, I don't know, 15 months here for Archer Shelovs. When you go back to last season in the Stanley Cup playoffs, putting in some fantastic performances, including a shutout to help them clinch a series against Nashville. You think about his really significant struggles at the NHL level this year. And now, you know what, five shutouts through a few rounds of the Calder Cup playoffs, another big one in a clinching performance last night. How do you, just kind of as an analyst, as an observer of this team and this organization, weight the highs in big moments versus some of the lows we've seen from Archer Shelovs when it comes to, you know, trying to figure out where his career is going next?
I mean, it is tough, right? But for me, he comes into the playoffs last year and does an amazing job. But, you know, like, that's a guy riding high while a team is also playing extremely well in front of him. Not to discount what he did, because he made some massive saves and did his job, but, you know, like, that's while you're at a high and everything's kind of, you're just rolling that momentum wave. And then it gets to the next season and, you know, pretty unexpectedly, he's thrown into an opportunity, and not only an opportunity, but a high pressure one of kind of needing to be a guy that can be counted on for more games. And let's just be honest, like, he wasn't ready for it. Like, he needs more games in the American League. And for goalies, it's, you know, he's not the first guy to, you know, need a bit more time, and you can't rush them with forwards. You know, it's easier the farther you get away from your net, right? Like, with a forward, you can live with some mistakes because there's a bunch of guys in behind him that can help. But as you keep getting a position closer, like, there's no one behind him. So he needs to build, and, you know, he has his year down in Abbotsford and gets, you know, has a really good record. Now he goes and he's building more confidence in the playoffs here. Like, that's how you need to build a goaltender and be able to give him that time to really find himself.
Shelovs now has crushed it at the Worlds in the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Calder Cup playoffs, and yet consistency has dogged him in the regular season throughout. It's sort of an odd profile where it's not just that, like, the we all know about the issues with shots through layered traffic from distance, Landon, but I also think we should have a lot of confidence that this guy's now shown us enough that we can think that he has just, like, a certain level of ice water in his veins. Like, clearly this guy has an ability to rise to the occasion in big games.
Exactly. And I think that's just, you know, with what my point of the last bit there was, is that he needed more time and, you know, for a goalie, like, they need to play. It's the only way. They can't just sit in practice and get better that way. Like, he needs to be in really good competition and be the guy that has pressure. And you know, I was talking about it a bit before of, like, what you learn through a playoff run, but in the grand scheme of things for a goalie especially, like, they need their time to figure out how to be consistent. It's not easy. And that's why you look around the league and even starters, like, it's a real issue of, to be that consistent guy. Like, there's only a handful of them in the league that, you know, way more times than not that they're going to have their game and be the goalie that, you know, everyone knows that they are. The rest, like, it's really tough. It's a hard league to do. So for him, he's shown that he can rise to the occasion. Now it's about, you know, can you be dialed in when it's November or February, like, in the dog days of the season? Like, can you stay through it and keep your work ethic up and make sure that you're mentally locked in? Like, that comes with age as well.
Switching to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Western Conference final resumes tonight. Edmonton hosting the Stars. They lead the series 2-1. A big story in this series has been the lack of 5-on-5 production from Dallas. And I guess the flip side of that is just the defensive job that Edmonton is doing. What is Edmonton doing defensively to slow Dallas down? What does Dallas need to change tonight to try to tie this series up?
Well, it feels like Edmonton, like they're a full five-man unit on the ice. Like they're working extremely well together. The forwards are back-checking really hard, and that gives the D a lot of confidence to stand up. But they're also in the offensive zone, and this is probably the biggest part, is, you know, the Edmonton D are diving down the boards anytime that they have the chance for the pinch. Like, they're giving Dallas no time and no easy exits. And when you flip it, you know, Edmonton is getting out of their defensive zone extremely fast, which enables them to get through the neutral zone quick. And before you know it, like, Dallas is on their heels again. And when Dallas in game three there, they, you know, they had some solid minutes and, you know, they had some really good chances. Randon hits a post. Like, they were pushing, but it's not with the same type of fight, same type of, you know, kind of, just like kind of that say no or take no for an answer, right? Like, Edmonton is just relentlessly on the forecheck, and for Dallas, it's a little bit of a, you know, trying to use their skill instead of just driving through, make Edmonton's D make a decision quicker, make them feel that pressure coming on and see if they can start getting sustained pressure that way, because the way that they're playing right now, it doesn't really give them a chance to hold on to a puck. They get in the zone, they try and get a shot, and then it ends up getting rimmed back out, and Edmonton's back on the jump again.
With this Oilers team overall, Landon, I have this overall take that I'm pretty sure they're not as good as they were last year. I don't think they're as fast anyway, although there's an element to which they're, I think, maybe like more mature. Feels like they're a more mature team. But I don't feel like their highest gear is as high as it was last season. How do you sort of contrast the experience of watching them this year versus last?
Well, I mean, I think a big part of that is the fact that Edmonton's power play is like kind of normal now, right? Like, last year it was at such an insane level. Like, they go one for three last game. And, you know, last year that would have for sure been 2 for 3, possibly 3 for 3. Like, they didn't miss on a power play. I would say this year, though, I think the sting of last year being that close has got this team so much more dialed in. Like, Dallas, you know, yes, they're having a ton of trouble 5-on-5, but it's not like they've been playing terrible by any means. But Edmonton is so confident in themselves right now. Every play, like, they're in on it. They're not making nearly as many 50-50 chances where they're, you know, kind of trying to poke and hope. Like, they're taking the extra half second, making sure that the puck gets out, or if it's in the offensive zone, you know, eating a puck for a little bit, making sure that they hold on to it and they can get a fresh line change in. Like, they understand a lot of what's going on right now, and they know that they're 6 games from a cup, and they're not going to let much get in the way of that. I feel like this team is just different. Like, I agree they're different, but I think it's just simply because they've got too much behind them that they know about, and they're not going to let that happen again.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to see if we do end up getting the rematch. And I don't want to put certainly this series to bed. And I know Carolina got the win last night as well to extend that series. But it's going to be fascinating if we do get that rematch to see, you know, the maturity that Drance is talking about, that extra layer of motivation from Edmonton, how that plays out. And I think the other big thing, again, if it's Edmonton versus Florida, is Edmonton having home ice advantage in this series compared to last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you, right? Like, we all want to see that rematch. And honestly, for me, I want to see it simply for what I was saying Dallas needs to be able to do to give themselves a bit of a better chance here is that more aggressive play. And if there's one thing, you know, Florida is going to come with, it's physicality in your face, and it's going to be a very hard series. just like they're giving Carolina right now. So, like, I really want to see how Edmonton handles that this year and how they're able to push back. But I think that home ice will be a big difference. Like, you've seen how the game looked in game three there with Rogers, and like, that place is an absolute nut house. Of course, there's more momentum there, and again, those fans went along for that ride just like the players did last year. Yep. Through the postseason. They're just as hungry, if not hungrier, because if I've learned anything from being on this side of the glass now, is you start to live and die with everything a bit more, because you have, like, you're not out on the ice. You don't have a chance to go make a play. So it's tough.
The roadblock that the Carolina Hurricanes have hit in terms of just their overall development, and I feels like they're bumping into a ceiling in the conference final here. Is it talent? Is it systems? What do you diagnose from what we've seen out of the Hurricanes?
Well, I mean, the hard part there is they're a very good team, and they have some very good players, and, you know, on their forward group, in their D-Cor, and they have a goalie that, you know, bounced back and played a great game to get the shutout in Anderson, that, you know, obviously has his injury trouble, but at the same time, when he's on, he's on. It's at a certain point, like, you just have to discuss as well, like, they've run into Florida, and Florida is, like, to say they're a really good team is underselling.
Yes.
Right, like, they're the cup defending cup champion, and they look like that team again. And just how hard and abrasive they can play, there's not many teams that can match it. That doesn't give, you know, the excuse to say, well, you know, the Hurricanes just have to accept that and not try or not try and improve. But, you know, it's a copycat league for a reason. But you need to get some more speed, some more toughness that you're able to combat that with, because you have guys that'll play through it, but you also just, you can't take that punishment for, if it's going to go long, you can't take it for seven games and not think that you don't need to dish it out as well and try and kind of break down their system and their players. It's just, it's too hard to take all of that and not respond.
Yeah, and it just seems like Florida does a better job of any team we've seen recently of kind of crushing the will and the morale of the other team, right? And it's, I think it's what you're talking about, that accumulation of physicality and aggressiveness. But, I mean, we've seen them in the early parts of this series and obviously at the latter parts of the Leafs series just completely demolish and, you know, kind of embarrass their opponent in these series.
And again, I think it's the fact that every time that you step over the bench onto the ice, whether you have a good shift or a bad shift, you're going to take hard contact. You're going to take an extra slash. You're going to get a cross check in front of the net. Anytime that there's a scrum, you're going to get the extra shot to the mouth or nose. Like, it's just, you know, that's coming. And then every time that you get back on the bench, you're trying to regroup quick. And then before you know it, you're going back out and you're getting hit again. And that's like, you take that constant abuse. And that's where I think it's so big that you have to be able to dish it back, and you're not going to match them, you know, hit for hit, or, you know, take a bunch of dumb penalties trying to do so. But you have to try and show that, you know, you're not going to just take it. And, you know, there's always the way, you know, the look at it of, you know, just don't show it bothers you and just keep working through it. And they're going to get frustrated. Well, while they're getting frustrated, they just hit you even more. And before you know it, you can't make a play.
Yeah. Also, like
you have to be able to get space for yourself.
Yeah, pretty tall ask to just, like, just pretend it's not annoying to play against the Panthers. It seems pretty annoying. I think that would be hard to pretend.
It's impossible, at least with my mentality that came through through my family. The just look the other way doesn't happen very often.
You didn't get that gene?
No, not quite. I'm still looking for it.
Landon, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, have a good one, guys.
That is Landon Ferraro, former NHL player, now a contributor and analyst here on 650 and on Sportsnet TV. So, as I mentioned, it's game four of the Western Conference Final tonight between Dallas and Edmonton. We'll see if Dallas can even up the series here. What I know you were making the point on the show yesterday. I think it's a fair one, right? Let's not bury the Stars just yet. It's only a 2-1 deficit. They've got a chance to even it up tonight and go back home, make it a best of three with two games at home. What's the one thing in your view that Dallas needs to do differently?
I'm so far from burying the Stars. I think this is like...
No, I think it's fair.
Completely a series. I'm actually surprised by the extent to which people are viewing the Oilers as being in dominant control.
Mm-hmm.
They are in control. They've been the better team in what? 8 of 9
yes.
periods? But this Stars team... I mean,
I think what I saw, I just think from a like a narrative standpoint, what happened is Florida got up 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
And then once Edmonton got up 2-1, the rematch was just out there and everyone just started thinking about the rematch.
Right.
That's what happened. If the Florida series was 2-2, you know what I mean? No one would be saying, oh, and Edmonton's going through for sure as well. Right.
Sure.
I think it was just because we're like, oh, Florida's through. And now it looks like Edmonton's going to be through as well. I think that's what happened.
Right.
Basically, and Edmonton has been the better team for most of the series, so that certainly contributes to it as well. But what does Dallas need to do, in your view, to tie the series up? Like, what did they have? What's the edge they can look to, the thing they can find and rely on to make this a long series?
Well, Mika Rantanen can go absolutely new.
It's a good one.
I mean, that's. So I'm curious, do we have lineups? Do we have what they...
So no Ekholm, I believe.
Yeah,
which I believe.
But do we have how they skated? The Dallas Stars, how they skated. Let's take a sec and find that out, because I'm curious to see the key here, because this is a really interesting series, in my opinion, in that the Stars are playing... So DeBoer is a game time, or sorry,
Hintz is a game time.
Hintz is a game time decision,
yeah.
And we didn't see whether there. So let's look and see. I'm curious to see how they line up. The Dallas Stars are really well positioned, in my opinion, in this series to play and win with a half court game, and where they're bleeding chances against is off the rush. Edmonton is torching them off the rush. I mean, we saw what McDavid did to Thomas Harley, and Thomas Harley's like, what, one of the 12 best skaters on the planet?
Yeah.
At least hockey-playing skaters? No, you know, not to... Well, they're speed skaters.
They're speed skaters.
There's figure skaters.
You're right.
I'm talking like hockey-specialized skating. Thomas Harley's top 12 on the planet. I'm not saying he's a faster skater than a 6'7" Dutchman.
Yeah, of course.
Or than a, you know, triple Sow Cow landing... Whomever.
Yeah.
But different. Anyway.
We don't want the speed skating community to come at us.
No.
Pitchforks.
They're really tall.
And those legs.
So, yeah. I mean, the legs.
Dude, they are built.
Absolutely built. The sort of thing that I'd suggest, though, is with how this series has played out, Dallas needs to take their chances in tight more than anything else. They need to, and they had them. They had them in game two. They hit the post, or Skinner was up to it. Yeah. Like, they had those chances. They were there. They need to figure out how to effectively convert on those and limit what they're giving up to Edmonton off the rush, which is an awful lot easier said than done. When we're talking about Connor McDavid, right? He poses such a threat, but that is where this series to this point is being decided and determined, and that's what they need to clean up.
Before we go to break here, I want to tell you about the Sportsnet 650 Jays Care 50-50, which is now live. You could win half the jackpot. The other half supports Challenger Baseball, a program that helps kids of all abilities across BC thrive through sport. This is a fantastic program, a fantastic cause. I know everyone at the station here is really excited to be involved supporting this. Tickets start at just $10. You can get bundles for even more chances to win. Don't wait. Get your tickets now at jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com. That's jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com. If that URL is too complicated for you, you can text MONEY to 650, 650 now. We'll send you a link for where you can buy tickets. So that's money to 650, 650. You'll get a link so you can buy tickets. Again, this is the Sportsnet 650, Jays Care 5050 in support of Challenger Baseball, a fantastic program. Get your tickets now starting at just $10. Must be 19 or older and live in BC to play. Let's make a big impact together. We'll take a break. I want to do some more trade speculation, some wildly irresponsible trade speculation to wrap up the show. We can take your texts as well. So keep those texts coming in, 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. I should also tell you the guests on Sportsnet 650 call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. We got an open segment to wrap the show up today, and I do want to just dip back into the trade conversation here a little bit. We were talking J.J. Paterka, who's number one on Frank Saravalli's trade board up at the Daily Faceoff, and just a really fascinating player to be out on the market, especially as the Canucks are concerned with their need for skill and offensive upside in the top six. But I also just think the Buffalo Sabres as a team, as a franchise, are a pretty interesting potential trading partner, I would say, for the Vancouver Canucks. And like, one of the reasons J.J. Paterka's name is even out there is he's an RFA. And he's an RFA who's in line for a really, really significant pay raise. He's going to make a lot of money considering his age, considering his recent goal scoring record. They've got Ryan McLeod, young center, 25-year-old center with arbitration rights, who just had a pretty productive season for them. They've got Bowen Byram on the blue line, who's an RFA. Who just, I think, played all 82 games or close to it this year as well. And of course, you know, has a track record with the pedigree and what he did in the Stanley Cup run for Colorado. You know, even a guy like Jack Quinn, who's not as high profile as those, but that's an interesting player. He's an RFA. So they've got all of these situations that are going to require some attention. Like, that's a pretty high profile set of RFA contracts and RFA situations for one team to have to deal with in a summer. Then you factor in the perpetual futility and the like desire to do something different. And it just feels like you start to look at it and take your pick of the guys I just named and who interest you and who might be most available and all that. But it feels like a situation where a lot could shake loose. A lot could happen there. And I just think in general, you made the point about Morgan Geeky as a potential trade target, but also as like a potential non-tender. Even with the massive spike in cap space, even with the massive spike in cap space this summer, it feels like the tricky RFA situation is still, as it has traditionally been in the NHL, like an interesting market to shop in if you're looking for players who could kind of surprisingly be available. I mean, Filip Hronek, that was why Filip Hronek was available, right? They were looking ahead to his RFA season, and they're like, ooh, that's a little tricky. Let's go ahead and deal this guy.
Yeah, the Canucks also bought Ethan Bear in this situation, so it's something that the Canucks are not afraid to do. They're not afraid to acquire players who are somewhat distressed. I don't mean distressed in terms of their quality as players, no, but in terms of their value.
Or their mental state.
Somewhat distressed as assets.
Yes.
As a result of, what would you call it? The uncertainty,
I think, is the biggest one, right?
Yeah,
it's work you have to do, well, and it has an uncertain outcome.
And their leverage.
Yeah.
Right? Because the leverage of arbitration is significant, plus the work put into it is significant. No one wants to do it. You know what I mean? Like, no one wants to go through and show up in Toronto with, like, documents filed and work and spend your summer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's July. Got to fire off 8 emails between me and the NHLPA's lawyer. Yeah. You know, it's like,
you have to, instead of Muskoka, you have to be in Toronto. It's like, no one wants to do that.
Yeah, everyone wants to drive up the highway. So, anyway, I think the truth is that those players become available in part because of that reason. And we've seen this Canucks team not buy scared when it comes to arbitration eligible players. So I think looking over lists of RFAs is a useful.
Yeah, not even because we always tend to think about the offer sheet route, right? Which who knows if that really materializes specifically for the Canucks. But
yeah,
those guys become available not just through offer sheet. You know what I mean? It's an inflection point one way or another. And it could be they're available because of the threat of an offer sheet, right? The other team doesn't want to have to deal with that. They'd rather just be proactive and get it done. But I think Marco Rossi falls in the same boat. You know, he's a guy who, based on his scoring profile, is going to have a really strong case to get paid as an RFA, but who was also playing fourth line minutes for them in the playoffs. Like, that's a classic example where what the next contract looks like maybe doesn't match how they view the player. And I think that is the type of opportunity the Canucks are going to have to be willing to really explore.
Now, who was it? There was someone really significant who was talking about, like, Marner maybe eyeing Vegas.
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's come up a lot.
Right. But there was someone super credible, like one of the major
five
insiders. And I just wish I could credit it appropriately. And in fact, I'm going to endeavor to do so. But that one got me thinking, too, because cap goes up. Players want to play for winners.
Mm-hmm.
Winning teams want to employ the best players. Winning teams willing to conduct.
Pierre LeBrun reported that Marner wants.
My athletic colleague.
Yeah, is potentially interested.
Thank you for doing that legwork, because I it's very important to me that I credit Pierre especially.
Of course.
And, well, not especially. I mean, I'd credit anybody, but
Pierre. He's your athletic colleague.
Well,
so.
And he rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so teams are tend to be willing to perform surgery in order to free up the requisite space, for example, to potentially pitch a guy like that. Like in Vegas's case, you know, we're talking about a team that in terms of their projected cap space this summer, you know, 9.62. There's not a lot of teams. There's like 7 teams with less cap flexibility going into this offseason. Dallas has 4.96. Think there's some players that would love to play for Dallas?
Yep.
You know, Tampa Bay doesn't have a lot of flexibility. Even Montreal doesn't have a lot of flexibility. New York, the New York Rangers, right? And there's some interesting buy lows, I think, up and down those rosters. You know, if you sort of look and squint. And, you know, as much as we're looking at like RFAs and UFAs and guys like, you know, your Matt Duchene class player, I also think we should be cognizant of, you know, if Vegas gets a chance to sign Mitch Marner, what does that
what
mean
are they
for,
going to do? Yeah.
Does that put you in a position where, you know, you can pay for William Karlsson?
Mm-hmm.
Does that put you in a position where you can pay for Nick Waugh? Right? I mean, because those are two pieces that the Canucks could surely.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's been pushed further down the lineup than his skill dictates for an awfully long time. Nick Waugh is like number one guy, I'm certain, could be a second line difference maker on almost every team in the league, and yet in Vegas is like habitually in the bottom six.
Yep.
You know, big, right-handed, versatile. I mean, that's like the dream target. And Vegas isn't afraid of shedding cap space to Vancouver, as we saw with Nate Schmidt, right? Like, that's not something they care about or will even blink an eye at. So, you know, I think it's worth going over sort of some of those teams too, some of those teams that are going to face some tough choices. And we're already seeing it in the inbox. Lots of people texting us about Anthony Cirelli.
Mm-hmm. So part of the, by the way, just to close the loop on the Pierre LeBrun report, the report was Anaheim, Detroit, Chicago, LA, among teams interested in Marner, Florida and Vegas are of interest to Marner, among others. So, which I don't think is saying that Marner's not interested in any of the teams he listed in the first list, you know what I mean, or vice versa. But anyways, that's how he framed it. Florida, I mean, is hilarious, considering they have the Sam Bennett thing to do as well. Like, imagine if Mitch Marner goes to Florida.
Or there's a trade. Mitch Marner, like, not a real trade, but a trade.
Sam
in
Bennett
fact,
ends
Sam
up in
Bennett
Toronto.
Goes to Toronto. Yeah. Mitch Marner goes to Florida. What do you think the Maple Leafs uncles who
they love it.
They'll love it until Mitch Marner crushes them in the playoffs.
That's true. Maple Leafs uncles.
What?
No, we all just know exactly what you mean when you say it.
Yeah. His name's Dean from Woodbridge.
Yeah.
And
can't stand Mitch Marner.
But Matthew Nyes. He likes Matthew Nyes more than he likes his own children.
He'll like Matthew Nyes for another like 2 years.
No, the moment Matthew Nyes gets paid.
That's true. That's probably
the conversation will change, especially because Matthew Nyes is going to get paid.
Yeah. By the way, I will say, I think L.A. is a really interesting potential Mitch Marner landing spot.
I mean,
they've got the cap space. They've got the need, to shake things up, all of that.
Who plays point on the power play between him and Kempe?
Oh, that's interesting. I like it.
You've got the two sick forwards running the point.
Yep.
Positionless hockey, baby. Let's go Newell Brown. Newell Brown with two position like forwards capable of playing the point. Do you know how sick those drop passes are going to be,
That'd
buddy?
Be awesome. You know, my only regret is that they have the cap space to do it without having to trade Adrian Kempe. Because if Kempe was ever on the market, you pick up the phone and do whatever, move heaven and earth to get him here.
Adrian Kempe is such a monster.
I love Adrian Kempe. Incredible player.
Elite player. I think when you consider Mitch Marner destinations, and maybe there's some Canucks fans who are like, I hope he comes to the Pacific and the teams in our division get softer. It's like, Mitch Marner on Anaheim makes that team. I bet if Toronto got Mitch Marner, or sorry, if Anaheim got Mitch Marner, I think they would have better playoff odds than the Vancouver Canucks, according to Vegas. Like, this is me handicapping what I think Vegas would do in terms of pricing. I think Vegas would view them as more likely to make the playoffs than the Vancouver Canucks.
What's your, just since we're on the topic here, what's your gut say about Marner landing spot?
Ooh, so you want me to, you want a zesty take.
Whatever. That's not like,
okay, let's go.
No one's going to be like, Drant said guaranteed he'd end up here. We're just spitballing.
Okay. Well,
we're shooting the breeze.
No, I know. I take that. And
Mine is LA.
I mean, I love it.
That's my prediction. At least as of now, May 27th is LA.
Yeah. Here's why I'm hemming and hawing. Okay.
Sure.
Let's build a segment out of this. Like, let's build the rest of our segment and do this.
Hold on. I want to say one more thing about the Buffalo Sabres. I mentioned all the guys that they have the decisions to make. Is there a larger deal between the Canucks and Buffalo to be made, especially since we heard their name in connection with Elias Pettersson this past season?
I say no, because I think both teams want to get better quickly. And that makes the sorts of deals that both teams are probably going to be willing to make more difficult to execute.
Right.
That's why, like, Boston looms large to me in the event that Boston decides to look ahead. Like, the Canucks and the Sabres are both going to most likely be doing business with teams that are willing
to take a step
settle
back.
Willing to accept futures for win now pieces. Right. And so I think the Canucks and the Sabres are effectively like shopping down the same aisle, as opposed to opening a stand, right, and selling their wares.
As opposed to bartering together.
Yeah, and as such, I think that makes cooperation slightly more difficult. Look, if there's one front office that you want to deal with right now, I think it's Buffalo. I think that level of desperation is pretty unique. Okay, let's go over. I'm going to organize on cap wages. These are the players by highest projected cap hit. And let's go through the top 15. Like, we're going to be able to get through 15. I know it sounds a lot when we start, and just make our bold prediction. So Marner first.
Okay.
Bold. Let's not go bold. Let's go zesty.
All right.
Going zesty today, bold? On Canucks Talk.
It sounds like Taco Tuesday in here.
Yeah. It sounds like, what flavor of Doritos is that? The purple bag?
Bold and zesty.
Do you know in the United States, they just call sweet chili heat Doritos, the king of all Doritos, by the way, they just call them the purple bag?
I did not know that.
It's one of them. I was like, can I get some sweet chili heat? And people would be like, do you mean the purple bag? I'm like, no, I mean the sweet chili heat. I would never refer to it as the purple bag. What are you talking about?
But I kind of get that, because like, it's with Gatorade. I'm not like, I'll have like Berry Blast or whatever. It's like, give me an orange Gatorade. You know what I mean? I don't know what the freaking flavor name is. I just know what the color is.
I mean, I think you're right for most things, but not sweet chili heat, baby.
All right. That deserves more respect in your view.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Anyway, let's go top 15 zesty takes on likely UFA landing spots. Mitch Marner's first. You say LA.
LA.
I'm going to go Carolina.
All right. No, like dead last in facilities or whatever.
Yeah, but they're going to swing the bat.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be Carolina.
Well, that's fine. I think it's going to be LA.
Strongly disagree.
So there you go. Brock Besser.
So I want to say something other than Minnesota.
I'm going to say Minnesota.
That's the easy way out.
Yeah, but I also just think it's
probably the right answer is the thing.
Here's dark horse candidate for Brock Besser, Vegas.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm going to go Vegas, actually.
I'm going to say Utah.
I like that.
I'm going to say Utah.
I like that. Nikolai Ehlers. Here's where I'm going, Utah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
How about Seattle?
Ooh, I like
that. Can you see a Dane liking Seattle?
That'd be a sick fit.
Liking the Pacific Northwest?
That'd be a sick fit for them. Because it's Moody?
Yeah.
John Tavares?
Toronto.
Aaron Ekblad?
Now that's an interesting one.
That is an
interesting
one.
I don't think it's going to be Florida.
I think it's going to be Florida.
Really? The sweetheart deal of all sweetheart deals?
I think the Ekblad contract is
the one. The legacy contract?
I think the Ekblad contract that comes through at 11:30 p.m. on June 30th is going to be the one that breaks hockey Twitter's brains. I think that's going to be the one where people are like, the taxes?
Right.
The taxes? What? Because I think they end up paying Bennett something that's more like market rate. And I think they end up paying Ekblad something that's more like halfway between Seth Jones on his retention level and Gustav Forsling. I just think Ekblad's going to have zero motivation to leave and is going to sign something.
So Ekblad's on a 7.5 AAV right now. Do you think that's going down? That's wild if that happens.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. I think it's going to be one of those contracts that like we're going to see and people are going to lose their minds.
If you do like 8 years at $6 million or something, so he's taken care of for the rest of his career, basically, yeah. Woo, that is going to be spicy.
That's gonna,
if that happens.
That's going to piss people off.
It really is.
I'm going Florida for Ekblad. I think it's completely reasonable to suggest that he's.
Okay, I'm going to choose. Oh, man. I'm going to say Columbus. I don't know why. Just pick that out of a hat.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Vladislav Gavrikov.
Oh, wow. We're really out of the big names now.
Well, no, it's just he's a defenseman.
He'll get paid.
Well, he's young, so his...
Yeah. He did the two-year thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so now he's set up.
So he's set.
Oh, man. He's 29. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank here on this one. I don't think it's going to be L.A. It feels like he's going to move.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what I'll say? I'm going to say Chicago.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, we need guys. We need credible top four. We're going to overpay him. He's obviously willing to do the mercenary thing because he did the 2-year deal, right? So it's like, we're going to pay him a lot of money to just come here and stabilize. I'll say Chicago.
Matt Duchene?
Dallas.
Oh, did I give a Gavrikov?
No.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to go Philadelphia.
For Gavrikov?
Yeah, I feel like Rick Tocchet would love
him. You think Rick Tocchet would love him? I think so. Yeah. I could see that for sure.
Matt Duchene.
I'm going to say Dallas.
I'm going to say Vancouver.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We've been talking about it.
Interesting. The sweet chili heat take from Thomas Trantz right there, breaking out the purple bag.
He's a center.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's mostly a wing, but he's a center. Mm-hmm. The Canucks will sell him as a center. They'll sell themselves on him as a center.
Sure, sure.
And Duchene's incentive this year is just like max my money on a long-term deal. And I just don't know who else is going to be more thirsty
to do that
with a 34-year-old player than Vancouver. Like, I just, you know, he's the guy who the team can say, this is our answer. And there's just not there's no one else. Like, there's no one else, man.
Yeah. So what does that deal look like? Like, what are we talking about here? He's 34 right now?
7 times 5. Seven and a half times five.
Oh, okay. I thought you were giving the term first. I was like, wow, we're taking him all the way to 41 here?
No. 7.5 million times five. The glow-up version of the Sean Monahan contract from last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my gut. Anyway.
All right. That's interesting. That's spicy.
Brock Nelson?
I'm glad we went through this. Brock Nelson, Minnesota.
Ooh, I'm going back to the New York Islanders. I feel like Brock Nelson is finally going to do the old Keith Tkachuk. Ivan Provorov.
I didn't know he was a UFA.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Anaheim.
I like that. I'm going Montreal. Sam Bennett.
Oh, man. So Sam Bennett's projected to make less than all of these guys?
Yeah, but I mean,
that's not going to happen.
Well, the model is just looking at his stats.
Yeah.
Right? The model doesn't know what we know.
I got to say Florida.
Yeah.
I'm not predicting.
I agree.
There's no way they're breaking up the band.
I think you have to pry Florida Panthers players out
absolutely.
Of Florida from their cold, dead hands.
Like, yeah, 100%. And I think even like you look at it, like Tampa, how many guys have walked away from Tampa? Like zero.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. I just don't think they're doing it. And I think Florida understands the importance of Sam Bennett. And we're seeing it like even more so this year than in the past couple of years. They're going to do whatever they need to do. And that might mean, so to draw it back to the Tampa example, like the only time a core guy left was when they traded Ryan McDonagh. You know what I mean? They flexed their muscles and they got him to waive and they traded him to Nashville. Now they eventually acquired him back. But do we see something similar for like Carter Verhaeghe to keep Sam Bennett? You know what I mean? That would be my prediction.
They
figure out everything they possibly can to keep Sam Bennett.
That would be my expectation. Honestly, I would not be stunned at all if we hear Verhaeghe to be dealt rumblings in mid-June and around the draft, like after the conclusion of the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
And I think that's like if those rumblings will tell you that they're confident they can keep Bennett
and Ekblad. Oh my goodness. It's still wild that they have that, like the Sam Reinhart one coming off a 57 goal season. He's making under
less
9
than
million.
10. Yeah.
Under nine.
Also a Selke nominee.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Let's stop it there because next up is Dmitry Orlov.
No.
Dmitry Orlov is.
We don't need to go there.
Yeah. Flat out where this exercise stops. But I think it's instructive.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Duchene. All right. That surprised me. And somebody texted in. They were like, Gert from Surrey was getting nervous. He's like, wait a second, who's coming to Vancouver? And then you saved it by saying Matt Duchene is coming to Vancouver. All right. You heard it here first, folks.
Well, I know. It's zesty.
I love that I started it off. I was like, no one's going to hold you to this. And I'm like, there you go. Thomas Trant says Matt Duchene to Vancouver.
I'm just saying the logic. It's hard to ignore the logic.
Yeah.
You know, like Duchene is number one guy who's going to be out there and probably more than anyone else, like willing to settle, not for like the best situation, but for the best offer.
Yeah.
And I just think the Canucks are going to be as thirsty as anybody else to tender him the best offer. They need a player of that caliber. Desperately.
They sure do. All right. That's the show for today. We're back tomorrow for a crossover Wednesday with Jason Bukla as well on the show. That's coming up tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.